From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Thank you guys so much for listening, for hanging out with us. It is the 9 o'clock hour. It's 9:06 to be exact. If you guys did not get a chance to listen to the first 2 hours of the show, I highly recommend it. And not just because it's me, and not just because we put a ton of work into it, but there's actually some really good stuff there. So you can download the podcast, Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim, anywhere you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, blah, 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 all the other sites. I don't know where else you get podcasts, but that should be enough. It's free. We don't even charge you for it. It just comes right to your phone, high-quality HD entertainment, right in your pocket. It's like having me right in your pocket. Hang out with me anytime you want in a non-creepy way. So check it out. All right, I saw this story. I was really fascinated by this because the headline grabbed my attention. We'll get into the details of this in just a second. But there's just a lot to unpack here. I mean, there's not much. It's it's a ridiculous story. Listen to the CBS headline. Hyper, and also, by the way, this is just a tailor-made, perfect story for the show. If you ever are trying to figure out how to recommend the show to people, and I do appreciate it anytime we get a good recommend, anybody who recommends the show, if you're looking for, like, somebody will often go like, all right, what's the vibe of the show? Is it really newsy? You go, I don't know. It doesn't have like a ton of news. It's like got some news, but it's not super newsy. Okay, well, is it like a sexy show? And you go, no, not that at all. Although this story is sexual, I will say, which is weird. But this show, this segment right here, this CBS headline perfectly captures what captures my attention, and I hope yours too. Here's the CBS headline, and this is the vibe of the show. Hypersexual zombie cicadas that are infected with sexually transmitted fungus expected to emerge this year. If that sounds strange to you or like something that you would click on, then we are simpatico. We would probably be friends in real life, which is why we're friends on the radio. That's a story that I am interested in. Hypersexual zombie cicadas that are infected with sexually transmitted fungus expected to emerge this year. I want to find out more about that. Is it going to affect my life? Probably not, but it's funny. By the way, here's what a cicada sounds like, in case you're interested. That's a cicada. All right, so the story starts with a extremely rare occurrence that apparently is happening this year in Chicago. In the Chicago area, there are not just one, but two cicada, they call them broods. I wasn't aware of that, but you're going to get some of that information here in the CBS Chicago report. These two broods of cicadas that both emerged in different years, because cicadas don't emerge every year. It's not like a frog who pops up in the springtime and starts ribbiting. This is a thing that only comes around, like cicadas only come around like once every 12, 13, 17 years in some cases. So this cicada population is coming out right now every 13 years. And then there is another cicada population that's also going to emerge, a brood, I should say, not a population, a brood that's going to emerge at the same time. So you'll have dueling cicada broods in one area. It's going to devastate the region with cicadas. You're not going to be able to escape it if you're in Chicago. This cicada expert who talked to CBS sounds very, very excited about this. And really, like, when your job is to study cicadas and you live in the greater Chicago area, then yeah, a dual brood emergence of cicadas with sexually transmitted fungus. Well, I think that just like ticks every box, doesn't it? If that's your job, so I could totally understand why this person's so excited. Let's hear from them, and then we'll get further into this.
According to experts, 2024 will be the year of the cicada, with upwards of 1 trillion expected to emerge this spring.
Joining us now to discuss it is Catherine Dana, cicada expert. How is 2024 different from other years when cicadas emerged?
I've been looking forward to this for many years now, because what we have is two different broods emerging in Illinois. So this is Illinois' big year, really. And these two broods have not emerged at the same time for 221 years. So no matter where you go in Illinois, it's going to be hard to escape the cicadas.
I love my favorite part here. Well, I mean, her excitement over these cicadas is my favorite part. My second favorite part is these two very buttoned up looking. You've seen news anchors. You know what news anchors look like. These two buttoned up looking male news anchors who are both sitting there going, huh, all right, yeah, okay. And they continue to talk. I'm not going to make you guys listen to this, but the segment on cicadas, I guess it was a slow news day in Chicago because it was about 4.5 minutes long. That is too long. So, but I'm going to tell you about this. This is a really crazy part of this story. And back to the sexually transmitted fungus, zombie cicadas, hypersexual zombie cicadas. So how does that play in? Listen to this. We have some details on this. Periodical cicadas spend most of their lives underground and only emerge after 13 or 17 years. This year, two broods of cicadas will emerge. Brood XIX, which I believe means brood 14, which comes out every 13 years, will emerge in Georgia and set in the southeast. And brood 13 will, so 14 and 13, all right, will emerge every 17 years, will also appear in Illinois. With this convergence, the bugs will arrive in numbers that have not been seen in generations. As we heard from that cicada expert just a second ago, it sounds like a couple hundred years, it's a big deal. So here's where it gets kind of freaky, like freaky, sexually freaky. Matthew Kaysen, he's an associate professor of mycology and forest pathology at West Virginia University, says both of these broods can be infected by a fungal pathogen called Massospora cicadina. Let's just say that's it. once the cicadas emerge from the ground, they molt into adults, and within a week to 10 days, the fungus causes, this part's kind of gross, but this is just the details, and this is what you're dealing with if you're an associate professor of mycology and pathology. The fungus causes the backside of their abdomens to open up. A chalky white plug erupts out, taking over their bodies and making their genitals fall off. Jeez Louise, that doesn't sound like a good time. The cicada continues to participate in normal activities like it would if it was healthy, he told CBS News. Like it tries to mate. It flies around. It walks on plants. Yet a third of its body has been replaced by fungus. Gross. That's really kind of bizarre, he says. Yes, I agree. Kaysen said that the reason the cicadas might be able to ignore the fungus is that it produces an amphetamine, which could give them stamina. So basically saying, like, they're going to be all hopped up on this fungus, and they're not going to notice that their genitals have fallen off. I think I would notice that if that happened to me. But there's also something else unusual about it, he said. Is that it? Like, there's just something else unusual? Like, that's already quite a bit unusual, but let's continue. He said, there's also something else about it that's unusual. He said, there's this hypersexualized behavior. So males, for example, they'll continue to try and mate with females unsuccessfully because, again, their genitals have fallen off and their back end is now a fungus. But they'll also pretend to be females to get males to come to them, and that doubles the number of cicadas that an infected individual comes into contact with. Usually, male cicadas will let out a loud humming sound. I can replay this if you're interested. This is what a male cicada might sound like. Maybe like a little higher pitched if the fungus has caused his stuff to fall off. Let's see here. Usually the male cicadas will let out a loud humming sound to attract female cicadas, and the female will flick her wings to signal she wants to mate. But the fungus has males flicking their wings like females to attract males and in turn affect them, Kaysen says. This is all very fascinating. This is all about cicadas. I hope that you have enjoyed this information on cicadas as much as I clearly did. It did remind me really fast. I want to play this clip, and it needs a little bit of context, so I'm going to share the context with you first. It's the best way to give context. Do you guys remember a show called Silicon Valley? It was on HBO for a number of years. It's a really brilliant show. It's a Mike Judge show. It's just super, super funny. I really enjoyed the heck out of it. I loved it. My wife and I just thought it was a funny show on TV. And it just, I mean, it's just totally making fun of Silicon Valley and all the different characters that live in Silicon Valley. One of the characters they feature in the first season is a guy named Peter Gregory. Peter Gregory is like an angel investor in different, you know, technology companies. And they have a scene where we are in Peter Gregory's office, and he's kind of a crazy off-the-wall type guy. And as you might imagine, a lot of these characters in Silicon Valley are. And he's trying to figure out, he's just like, they're focusing in on his process and how he figures out how to make money on the different things that he invests in, because he's got all this money to invest and he's a genius. And so it's just like giving us a little insight into what a crazy genius looks like. So the reason I'm playing this is obviously you're going to hear in just a second. It has to do with cicadas, but for the context is what I just told you. And he's sitting there staring at his desk. He has been brought in lunch, probably some sort of a advertisement tie-in to the TV show. But he's looking at a bunch of Burger King burgers, and he's noticing that on every single Burger King bun, atop the bun is that signature sesame seed that is on all these different buns on Burger King. And he is looking at these, and he's staring at them. And you and I might just see sesame seeds, but he sees investment opportunity, and he breaks it down, and it has to do with cicadas. So where else are you going to find another cicada thing in popular media and television? So I thought I would play this for you. I hope you enjoy it.
Do you see this?
The Junior Whopper?
No, not the sandwich. This seed atop the breading.
Those are sesame seeds.
A high number of these breadings have sesame seeds on them.
Billions of breadings. Sesame seeds.
But they have Myanmar and Brazil. No. Amusing coincidence that two of the three countries that provide the world sesame seeds have such large cicada populations, no? The cicadas of Myanmar emerge every 13 years, while the Brazilian cicadas emerge every 17. Next year, they will hatch simultaneously for the first time in 221 years. Crops from both countries will be decimated. Unlike Myanmar and Brazil, Indonesia has no cicada population. I was surprised to see Indonesian sesame seed futures priced so low. I made a purchase. And now, if the shortage spikes the global price even 10%, we'll profit, Evan?
$68 million.
There you go. That's and that's how you make money in Silicon Valley. You just like stare at Burger King burgers, and you look at sesame seeds, and then you know about cicadas. And you know about cicadas now, because you and I have just talked more about cicadas than I have ever talked about cicadas in my entire life. But I enjoyed it, so I hope you did too. All right, I want to get to this other story. I found this really interesting. And do you guys ever watch the Bill Maher show? Bill Maher has a podcast that he does sometimes. It's a pretty good podcast. It is a video cast. He talks to a bunch of people in it. But it's called Club Random. So Bill Maher has a couple of shows. He has his Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO, and then he has this other thing called Club Random. And when he's doing these Club Random interviews on his podcast, because it's the world of podcasting and they don't have all the same rules that we have to live by here on radio, he can kind of do whatever he wants. So he can drink whatever he wants. He can smoke whatever he wants. And I think he's enjoying himself immensely. So a big part of his shtick on the show is that he's usually smoking weed, it looks like, with his guests. His guests aren't always smoking it, but he's usually smoking it. And so from time to time, he has people on with him, and he's always smoking weed. That's like kind of his thing. So do you guys know who Steve-O is? I've not told you about Bill Maher. Do you guys remember Steve-O? He was on Jackass. He's also has a podcast. Everybody has a podcast. I got a podcast. You should check it out. Kyra Nice with Jake Skorheim. But so Steve-O has a podcast too. And Steve-O's podcast is called, I believe it's called Wild Ride. And I think he basically just sits in what looks like an RV, and he interviews guests around a table. And so Steve-O was on his podcast Wild Ride recently, and he was talking to one of his guests, and his guest is a guy named Patrick Bet-David. And he was asking Patrick about his recent interview on Bill Maher's show. Patrick didn't have much of a response. That's not the important part. But what's interesting is Steve-O was kind of like asking him that question, because he was recently asked to be on Bill Maher's podcast, and he said, "Hey, Bill Maher, I am 16 years sober, or nearly 16 years sober, and would you mind when I come on your podcast? Like, I'm happy to come on your podcast, but I don't like to be around anybody who's doing any drugs or anything like that." Because Bill Maher, again, with the smoking of the weed. And so apparently Bill Maher said, "No, that's what I do. So I'm not going to, you know, I guess we'll just not have you as a guest." So Steve-O then kind of talks about this, and he's kind of upset about it. So I'll play that clip in just a second. But when I originally heard this, I was kind of on Steve-O's side. But then I heard Steve-O's explanation of this, and I started kind of getting on the Bill Maher side. We'll talk about that in just a second. But here's Steve-O talking about it on his podcast.
I just wanted to say something that I watched a piece of your appearance.
By the way, I'm not trying to be critical of Steve-O's voice here, but it's like an hour and a half. It sounds, I don't know, it sounds like it might be difficult to listen to that for an hour and a half. But that's just me. You might love it. I'll get back to it.
It's on Bill Maher's show.
Yeah.
And I found the way he spoke to you to be rather insulting. I don't need you to respond to that. It's more of a comment than a question. Are you a guy who enjoys smoking marijuana or breathing in marijuana?
Marijuana is very good for me, but I don't smoke weed.
All right, that other guy's got a nice voice. I like the other voice. And nothing against Steve-O. He's obviously very talented at doing crazy stuff. I'm sure he's got a very popular podcast. And anyway, so he then talked about why he wanted to talk about Bill Maher. And when Bill Maher basically said, like, no, it's a deal breaker. I'm not going to have you on my podcast if you can't be around weed.
I bring that up because for me, I'm a clean and sober guy. Like, it's very important that I maintain my sobriety.
How long have you been?
Approaching 16 years.
Get out of here. I knew it was 16 years.
And I'm about to be...
Patrick Bet-David has a fantastic voice. I feel like a connoisseur of voices, because in the radio industry, you kind of have to know about voices. Patrick Bet-David sounds really nice. Very soothing. Something kind of like... I don't know. It's very nice.
Good for you, bro.
Not too nice. I'm not trying to be weird.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And it's there's nothing.
I bet you he has a podcast. I should see if he has a podcast.
Like, really, there's nothing that I value more than my sobriety. There's nothing more that that I protect than my recovery. And I found it kind of upsetting when the Bill Maher podcast, which I saw you on, reached out, and they you know, his thing is he smokes pot the whole time while he interviews people, and I said, hey, I'd happily go on there, but could he, while I'm on, out of respect for my sobriety, could he refrain from smoking
and
pot?
He said no,
that's a deal breaker.
So yeah, like when I first heard that, I was kind of on his side. I was like, oh, that sucks that Bill Maher, you know, can't make room for him. And then I thought about it a little bit more, and I was like, well, it's Bill Maher's show. I mean, Bill Maher can decide to do whatever he wants to do. And obviously, it's, I'm sure Bill Maher would put the weed down for Tom Cruise or somebody who's a giant, massive star. But Steve-O, I don't know. I'm not like taking any shots at Steve-O. I actually really like Steve-O, but I don't know why somebody would be upset by this or think that it's a big deal. I just don't think it's that big of a deal. Like, nothing happened. He didn't go on the show and Bill Maher didn't blow smoke in his face or something like that. He just said, hey, do you want to come on my show? Yeah, I can come on your show, but you can't smoke weed. And Bill Maher was like, oh, shoot, that's kind of the one thing I do. So, yeah, let's just, like, not do it this time. So I wouldn't take it personally, and I wouldn't be upset about it. It's like if you went on – do you guys ever watch those Dude Perfect videos? I watch those with my kids, and my sons love them. They're, like – they started out making, like, crazy basketball shots, and now it has evolved into just this massive empire where they just do a ton of amazing things. But if you went on Dude Perfect and you said, hey, I want to come on your show and I want to do a video with you, but I don't want you making any basketball hoops because I get kind of triggered by basketball shots. That's a really horrible analogy. That doesn't really work. But I guess in the end, I would just say, just don't go on the show and don't worry about it. It's not that big a deal. All right. We got a lot more coming up. Next, do you guys remember that Francis Scott Key Bridge disaster from a couple weeks ago, that ship that slammed into that bridge? We have some updates on that. But also, it almost happened again over the weekend in New York. Another massive cargo ship almost slammed into the Verrazano Narrows Bridge. And we're going to tell you about that and what happened, like how New York avoided a disaster that Baltimore did not avoid. All right, we're going to be right back with that. Stick around. We're going to be right back on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, I was telling you guys before the break, there was another incident involving a massive cargo ship, this time in New York. A couple weeks back in Baltimore, there was a huge container ship. It was called the Dolly, and it was going through the waterway there in Baltimore and lost power. And unfortunately, it slammed into one of the beams on the Francis Scott Key Bridge, one of the supports. That entire bridge just fell like dominoes. And there's, I mean, if you haven't seen it on video, it really is quite amazing to watch. You know, you could check that out. Sadly, six people lost their lives. We'll have an update on that in just a second. But this almost happened over the weekend in New York. A huge container ship lost power near New York City's Verrazano Bridge, less than 2 weeks after the Baltimore Francis Scott Key Bridge disaster. The container ship, this time called the APL Qingdao, which weighs 89,000 tons, lost propulsion at around 8:30 p.m. while traveling through New York Harbor. Thankfully, they were able to avert this disaster, and they were able to do so because there was some tugboats riding alongside it, which is something that didn't happen in Baltimore. We'll get in more of that in just a second, but ABC7 had some of the details on this latest near disaster.
This morning, another massive container ship losing power less than 2 weeks after the deadly bridge collapse in Baltimore.
I'm sorry for this audio. Sounds kind of strange, but there's some good info here, so it's almost over.
Pictures posted online show the 89,000-ton, 1,100-foot-long vessel APL Qingdao anchored close to New York's Verrazano Narrows Bridge. The U.S. Coast Guard confirms the container ship had experienced a loss of propulsion Friday night as it traversed a waterway in New York Harbor. Three tugboats were escorting the ship, which is standard procedure for large vessels heading out into the Atlantic. The tugboats were able to tow the ship until it regained propulsion. Authorities note even if the ship had come close to the bridge, the design of the bridge with protective rock islands built around its posts would have likely prevented the kind of March 26 catastrophe in Baltimore when a container ship lost power, hitting the pillars of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, causing it to collapse and kill six construction workers who fell with the span.
So that's really key. I mean, the two things are key there. One, the fact that it had some tugs riding along with it, were able to kind of steer it away. And two, the fact that those beams are surrounded on that bridge, at least the New York Bridge here, those beams are surrounded by massive boulders. They come up, so they're almost creating like a boulder island around it. So even if a ship were to get really, really close, it would either run aground or kind of be, you know, forced to veer off. CBS has a report. They have been looking for some of the bodies. There's still missing bodies in the case of those construction workers who fell off of the Francis Scott Key Bridge when it collapsed, and they just recently found another one. This is about earlier today.
Authorities in Baltimore have recovered the body of a third construction worker who was killed in the Baltimore Bridge collapse. The recovered individual was identified as 38-year-old Maynor Yasser Swazer Sandoval. Officials previously said six workers were making repairs at the bridge when it collapsed. The bodies of two of them were recovered last week.
And if you've seen some of the recovery efforts, not just recovery efforts, but the cleanup efforts in that waterway, there are like 12 massive cranes, at least the video that I was watching. There's like 12 massive cranes trying to pick up all these remnants of that bridge. They're trying to figure out a way to get it open. CBS also detailed what their plans are for getting that open. It's one of the biggest ports in the United States.
You know, the Army Corps of Engineers late last night came out and said that they believe they can get a 35-foot deep shipping channel back open by the end of the month. That will allow some cargo ships into the port. And then they said they think they can get the main channel, the one that's back here that's being worked on with as many as 12 cranes and 51 divers. I think they can get that open again by the end of May. And that would get the port fully back up and running. The president said the port is responsible for about 20,000 jobs here in the area. And so getting it back open is key. Maryland's governor announced an agreement between 50 area businesses not to reduce their staffing despite the closure of the port. The Baltimore Orioles and the Baltimore Ravens also announced a $10 million donation to recovery efforts.
Oof, that's devastating. I mean, that's a lot of jobs in that area. What is it, 20,000 jobs there associated with that port? So obviously they're going to try to get that back up and running as fast as possible. But this New York thing made me think, why? Like, and we had a bunch of texters actually text in and ask this question too. why do you think it is that these boats are not required to have tugboats with them? Like, why? When are they allowed? When are the tugboats allowed to kind of peel off, and the boats are then piloted through these waterways? Why are they not required to have tugboats with them at all times, just in case something like this happens? It certainly sounds like it was required in New York. I don't know why it wasn't required in Baltimore, but I actually looked into this a little bit further. So thank you guys for the questions on this. And this is what I found. The Baltimore Banner had this really interesting article, and the headline is "Key Bridge Collapse Could Change Rules for Tugboats." And it basically walks through what happened. They say the pilot's first call was to summon any nearby tugboats. Just a half mile from Francis Scott Key Bridge, the Dolly had lost its engine, propeller, and all navigational equipment. The behemoth ship loaded with cargo was drifting off course with no means of steering. What the Maryland-based pilot may have instantly decided, and what experts say, is that tugboats were likely the vessel's only chance to avoid crashing into the bridge, similar to what happened in New York. But the pair of tugboats that initially guided the Dolly out of the port of Baltimore had peeled off about 3 miles earlier. And within minutes, the powerless Dolly would crash and send the 47-year-old bridge tumbling into the river, killing six construction workers who were repairing potholes on the bridge's deck. With tugboats close by, quote, "you have a fighting chance to change the direction of the ship," said Henry Lippian, a forensic crash reconstructionist and retired U.S. Coast Guard lieutenant. Pushing against the ships, the tug might have been able to guide it away from the bridge pier. He says, "I think in this case, maybe it would have been a glancing blow, or maybe they could have kept it in the channel." Here's another interesting thing. There was a Maryland pilot on board the ship, steering the ship, apparently. In the wake of the March 27th ship collapse, new rules governing how long a tugboat is required stay beside a ship will likely be written. Tugboat crews and maritime experts are now saying tugboats are not required to guide ships through any bridges in the Chesapeake Bay unless the U.S. Coast Guard or captain of the port orders it for individual vessels that may have mechanical issues or are navigating in poor weather conditions. The Coast Guard and Maryland Port Administration say that they don't regulate how and when tugs accompany a vessel. The Port Administration said that the pilot and the ship's captain have the discretion to decide when tugs peel off from a vessel. Maryland's pilots, with decades of maritime experience, board foreign container ships like this one in Maryland and guide them up and down the bay's deep channel. The Maryland Pilots Association, which is governed by the state and deploys each pilot, declined multiple requests for comment. So it clearly sounds like some questions need to be asked of this pilot and why they decided to let those tugboats peel off almost 3 miles before they reached this bridge. Like, it would have been nice if they were still, you know, still on site so that they could have avoided this disaster. The article concludes, it says, "In the port of Baltimore, how far tugboats accompany ships varies widely. According to a Banner analysis of ship location data from marinetraffic.com, when leaving the port, pilots often decide to call off tugs well before passing under the Key Bridge. The Dolly's two tugs peeled off about 2.9 miles before it crashed. In the week leading up to the crash, cargo ships dismissed their tugs as far as 3.2 miles from the bridge. On the other hand, tugs stayed with the MSC Toronto, a container ship that left from the same marine terminal as the Dolly just hours before, until it had gone under the Key Bridge and started making its way down the river. Another tugboat captain for Baltimore, who declined to reveal his name for fear of company retaliation, said that he is confident that the tugging industry will change after the Key Bridge collapse, most likely with tugs being required to escort massive vessels through the bridges on the bay. So, you know, if it just happened in New York, if it's, and it was avoided, the disaster was avoided, but if it did happen in Baltimore just a couple weeks earlier, it sounds like that might be the way to go. All right, so I was interested in that. Thank you guys so much for the text question. Glad we could get to the bottom of that. We got a lot more, so stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You are listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. We appreciate it. Thank you guys for downloading the podcast, Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim. It's just been a fun show. I hope you've enjoyed it. The last segment, this is my gift to you at the end of every night. It's my way to entice you to listen to the entire show. I save the best stuff for the very end of the show. So tonight, I'm saving, is Donald Trump as heavy as he used to be? I don't know. But according to pictures that people are seeing, Donald Trump is looking a little more svelte these days. So much so that there was a panel on Chris Wallace's Saturday morning show on CNN. They were speculating about Donald Trump, whether or not he was using the weight loss drug Ozempic, which everybody seems to be using these days. This will be funny. We'll play this and we'll laugh about it in just a second. But here's the CNN panel talking about Trump not being so heavy anymore and whether or not he is taking Ozempic.
This Easter weekend, there was a very touching photo of former President Trump with two of his grandchildren. And he's looking, if you see there, rather svelte. And that caught the eye, as you can imagine, of many on social media and elsewhere. And there has been a lot of chatter about whether he is on the big O. And by that, I mean Ozempic, to the point where the New York Times, my employer, actually ended up writing to the campaign to formally ask them if he was on Ozempic. And the reason I find this interesting is because Trump is larger than life. That is his brand. He's a big guy. And this shrinks you. And so it might be that he wants to be healthier. It might be that he wants to be more attractive on camera for the campaign. But it also might be that it could hurt him in the end. Because
she advocating for him not to lose weight? That's kind of what it sounds like.
Because he just doesn't seem quite as imposing, perhaps, if he does go on the Ozempic journey. Which
And I know you were worried because you want him to be as imposing as possible.
Of course, of course. It's really out of concern for him that maybe it might not be.
We should just point out, we have no idea if he's what he's doing. Maybe he's...
Maybe he's working out.
Maybe he's working out.
He's such a disciplined guy.
Yeah.
He's a very disciplined guy. Let's see here. If you guys don't know what Ozempic is, I can give you just a very, very quick refresher. Ozempic was originally designed, if I have my facts straight, which I think I do. Ozempic was originally intended by Big Pharma to be something to fight diabetes. One of the side effects is that it actually like kind of curbs your appetite, makes you not as hungry. And so when people don't eat as much, they don't gain weight. In fact, they kind of lose weight when they're not eating. And so people started realizing that if you take this diabetes weight loss prescription, you could actually lose a ton of weight on it. So much so that Oprah was talking about it as well.
Oh, you all have been seeing the headlines, the new weight loss drugs. Everybody's talking about Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro. Are these new drugs a miracle cure?
Are they a miracle cure? So much so that Oprah actually left Weight Watchers. I think she owned 10% of the company. And she left the company. She left the board, I believe. And because she now is saying, well, it's not about the way you eat and exercise. It's in your brain. You can't lose weight if you, not everybody can lose weight. Just if you are working out, it's a disease. And so this drug helps with the disease. Do you believe that? I don't know if you believe it. I don't know if you think it's true. Jillian Michaels, who is a weight loss expert. In fact, she was on a show called The Biggest Loser. The name is actually not as cruel as it sounds. She was talking to Fox News. And she said, hey, like Ozempic is not without its downsides.
Here's the problem with this, right? Is that you can never get off these drugs. If you do get off of them, all of the meta-analysis show us that you will gain all the weight back and then some, two-thirds of it within the first year. But now you've messed up your metabolism, you've lost muscle, you might be running the risk of all these side effects. So you're going to gain it back and then some and have lingering side effects. On top of that, let's say you're like, no, I'm staying on it forever. Really? Google Ozempic plateau. You will plateau on Ozempic. It will stop working. Right around the 18-month to two-year mark, it's going to stop working. Now what are you going to do? Because now you're literally beholden to it. It's expensive. Insurance isn't going to cover it forever. Are you going to be on it forever? So we don't even know what this looks like 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road.
Who knows? Who knows what it looks like? But here's kind of my take on this. Like if you need a take or care about my take on Trump and Ozempic. Ozempic has, I am surprised at how quickly Ozempic has been universally adopted by every single person, it seems, especially in like mass media and in Hollywood. They're like, this thing's the best. Big Pharma, don't we love Big Pharma and drugs to make us skinnier? The thing that I find confusing about it, though, is like how fast people have adopted it. But you watch, mark my words, if they find out that Trump is on Ozempic, like Ozempic is doing everything they can right now. If I was Ozempic, I would be doing everything I can to distance myself from the idea that Trump is on this. Because you think Oprah and Trump want to be on the same thing? No, I don't think so. I don't and who knows if it would be good for their shares. I doubt it would be really great for their public perception campaign if Trump became the new face of Ozempic. Ozempic, that's not Ozempic. All right, thank you guys so much for listening tonight. We appreciate you guys tuning in. I hope you all have a wonderful evening. Come back here tomorrow. We have a great show. We're already working on it. But tonight, we got to get to bed. It's late. Night-night.